Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, you lovely lot. Welcome to this week's edition of Tuesday Night Jaw, brought to you by the Distraction Pieces Network, the wonderful podcast network that holds, facilitates, and distributes this here wrestling podcast. We love them very much and very dearly, and there is several amazing podcasts on our network that are all worth your while. Little bonus shout out this week. Dr. Susie has released a book, which is called Say Why to Drugs, which is the name of her tremendous podcast that you should all check out. So we've been really excited to see the book is already in Waterstones and other book emporiums. I think that's a term. It's out there in the wild. So if you do listen to that podcast, or even if you've never listened to that podcast, go and check out the podcast and check out the book and go and help Dr. Susie on her little journey to being awesome. So that's all the business in terms of distraction pieces. This week's episode is going to be a Q&A. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for everyone that submitted questions on Twitter. I really appreciate it. There's been some really, really good ones that I'm really excited about answering, so we'll get stuck into them in a second. The reason why I thought we should do a Q&A is that obviously now the progress thing is taken on and then become a thing, and people have become aware of it more. So I kind of just wanted to open up a little bit and take any questions for that reason. But also as well, I appreciate sometimes that I'm not always an open book, and I can be quite reserved in terms of speaking about myself because it genuinely makes me feel a bit weird. That is why I do the job I do, which is essentially whatever it is. It's essentially like, hey, look at this person over here. Aren't they really good? I'm gonna get out of the way now for like half an hour to an hour, and then I'll come back and you'll go, oh, it's this guy again. But then I'll go, hey, look, there's a person over here. That's basically my job, and I quite enjoy that because I don't really like being the center of attention very much. But I thought, for the benefit of the podcast and the benefit of the new gig going forward, I thought I'd be a little bit more open and try and be a little bit more approachable in terms of any queries or questions or you guys getting to know me a little bit better. Right, let's have a look at some questions. Okay, question number one. Weetabix, serve with milk or yogurt? And also, how many Weetabix in the bowl? Milk, obviously, for all the vegans out there, you know, go soy, go hazelnut, go almond. Hazelnut's very nice, actually. I think that's my favourite milk alternative. But yeah, it has to be milk. Yogurt's a bit too fancy, that, for me. Especially for, like, a proper, solid, working-class breakfast, such as Weetabix. Obviously, I can't eat Weetabix because the clue's in the name. But yeah, it would be with milk. I guess though, yogurt and honey would be a nice little combination though. Try it out. How many in a bowl? Standard, two. Has to be two, always. Don't want to be greedy getting in free. And it'll set you right up for the day. I look forward to my Weetabix sponsorship coming through in the email. What do you usually get from the chippy? So I now, for two reasons, can't really eat much from the fish chip shop. Ooh, aren't I an exciting human being? I'm vegetarian, so I don't eat fish. And obviously the batter is got gluten in it. But there is a really good fish and chip shop in Didsbury, which is a sub area of Manchester. And there's a place called Foster's that on every Sunday they do a gluten-free day. And they also do battered halloumi. So now it's battered halloumi and a portion of solid chips. And I recommend it. There you go. Foster's, I look forward to your sponsorship deal coming through on the email. You should go and check them out. They're nice folk and it's a nice little place. All right, MJ from the awesome Riptide After Party podcast. He's a lovely guy, and Riptide are an amazing company, so go and check them out. Always a pleasure, MJ. He asks, why does everyone like slash pretend to like slash despise Tom Newton? Delete as appropriate. Despite Tom's, mine and Tom's back and forth online, Tom is actually a wonderful dude because it's so nice to have someone that is so positive and enthusiastic about wrestling, especially with someone who clearly wants to be involved in it. And I've got absolutely no doubt in my mind that Tom will not only be involved in wrestling, but be really successful in whatever he chooses to do. He's just a good kid that has his head on his shoulders, which is a massive thing, because when I was his age, when I was in my 18s, my 19s, my 20s, I was a complete bell end, which is quite funny, because if you know, you know. I was an idiot, and I didn't know anything, and I didn't know any better. But Tom's got a really good attitude, and he wants to learn, he wants to listen, and also he's super enthusiastic. So next question is, daddy or chips? Now, I should have said that with a Welsh accent, but being Welsh, I don't want to upset my fellow countrymen with my terrible Welsh accent, which occasionally comes out when I say certain words, mainly here. But it's definitely chips. Definitely chips, no question about it. Okay, next question. Would you rather fight an Ilya Dragunov-sized ant or 1,000 ant-sized Ilya Dragunovs? Bloody neither. I'm scared of both. Because, the problem is the 1,000 ant-sized Ilya Dragunovs hitting you with 1,000 torpedo Moscows is going to chop you down, man. And then they're going to carry you to their little lair. But then a terrifying prospect of an ant the size of Ilya Dragunov. Oh, man. Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which was a great movie, but also gave me nightmares because I just did not like the animatronics of the insects and stuff. It kind of just creeped me out. So I'm probably, for that reason, you know, for scarring in my childhood, I'm probably going to say 1,000 ant-sized Ilya Dragunovs. Oh, that's a terrifying prospect. Okay, next question. I was expecting this question and I don't mind answering it. Are you not going to do a Royal Rumble roundtable? Short answer is no. Long answer is there's two reasons. So reason number one, with the bigger events now, a lot more people are a lot more busy around it. Now, whether that's if people are working for NXT or NXT UK and they have events in and around the Rumble, or even on the independent level, a lot of places do shows that weekend or around the event. They obviously have events where they sort of double up with showing the Rumble afterwards and stuff. So logistically, it's quite a difficult thing to do. But probably the main reason and the other reason is I now don't feel comfortable having my opinion / criticism online about other companies due to my professional involvement. Now, that isn't, I'm sorry, I know it's not going to be really sexy or really interesting to say, but that's got nothing to do with me working for Progress in terms of, WWE. I work for Progress and my opinion is my own and I can have my own opinion. It's just that I think it's poor form for someone that is out in the public domain who should be upholding a level of professionalism to just sit there and have a podcast that will criticize. Because the problem is like, if we do a roundtable as well, I know that it's a positive podcast, but if we are only saying nice things about a show, that is not an accurate portrayal of that show. And I'm not saying that there's never going to be opinions or discussions on the podcast, because there will. We just have to be more mindful of it now. So with that in mind, I think we'd be doing a watered down slash diet version of the roundtables than we used to. And I don't want to do that. There is so many podcasts out there and so many reviewers and so many little bits and pieces that do such a better job at being critical of a product or a show than I can be, that I would much rather people go and support them and voice their opinion in that way. It's the same thing with Twitter as well. I've had a couple of people say like, oh, I hope you're not offended about my opinion on this. And I'm never going to be, because it's your opinion and you're entitled to your opinion. So it's one of the things of just being more acutely aware of the environment and nature of online and social media now, where you say something and people will hold you to that or make more out of it than it is, or whatever. So that is a very long-winded way of saying, no, we're not doing the roundtables anymore, but we are going to be doing other stuff throughout the year. Okay, next question. How did it feel to announce Chapter 101, and how did you find the atmosphere? Little sub bit as well. Super excited to be getting my hands on tickets for 103 for my birthday. Well, first of all, awesome. Glad that you're coming to Camden again. Tickets are available. Lol. Getting on that shill hype. Right, Chapter 101. I actually didn't want to watch it back, or I wanted to watch the matches back, but I didn't want to watch myself back, because I was just like, oh, it's really cringy and weird and awful. But there's a bit at the beginning where I say, like, I feel like I'm having an out-of-body experience, and I know that's like, sounds really overdramatic, but I legitimately did not feel like I was in my own body when I was doing it. It was really, really weird. And then obviously the thing happened with Eddie and Mark. The minute that happened, like, I just clicked back and I was like, oh shit, yeah, I do know how to do this. I have been in wrestling for 16 years and I have been a ring announcer for like 7 to 8 years of them. So when I kind of got my head around it and got the initial thing out of the way, I was like, oh no, I actually really missed this and I really enjoyed it. Because obviously I had to give up commentary as well, which was a really, 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 really hard thing to do, because I loved doing commentary with Glenn and I just love doing commentary in general. But I did it. I made the decision because it's the right thing to do for the company, and I don't regret it. And also now, that little reminder, because I hadn't been ring announcing for a while, pretty much since I'd stopped with Fight Club. I haven't ring announced anywhere. I've always been a commentator, so I'm still commentating in Chaos, and I'm going to be doing their shows in February, and then I'll be leaving in February, and then Progress will be my sole wrestling thing, which means also as well I won't be commentating for Future Shock going forward as well. Decision being, I just want to put all my efforts and time into the Progress job. Yeah, it was good to have it feel right and it feel good. Also as well, it's just that I'm really appreciative of people being so receptive to it, because I know it's a massive departure from what everyone knows. And I will say this, and you can quote me on this, I am my own ring announcer, and a lot of the stuff that Jim did, I won't be doing, and I'm not doing it to deliberately be different. It's just that I am actually a really different ring announcer to Jim in the stuff that I do. So I kind of, I guess I'm asking for a bit of patience, and hopefully the transition will be easier, and hopefully you'll pick up on some of the stuff I do over this year, and it won't feel so weird, but it is going to be different from gym, despite the obvious comparison. And the obvious comparison exists is because we are actually really good mates, and we're quite similar in our personalities and our likes and dislikes, etc., etc. But as ring announcers, we are quite different. So hopefully different doesn't mean bad. I'm sure you'll let me know if it is. But yeah, it's a massive transition period for the company, and I'm included in that. So we will get to a point where it won't feel so weird. Okay, next question. Favorite pizza topping? I don't know. I get more excited because again, I'm a vegetarian and gluten intolerant. So gluten-free pizza, I'm gonna shock some of you here, is not the best. It's kind of the concept of pizza rather than the actuality of pizza. The best ordered pizza, if you're gluten-free, by the way, and want some pointers, is if you're going to sit in and eat it, it's Pizza Express. That's definitely the best gluten-free pizza. Or if you're ordering it, always order from Pizza Hut, because it's infinitely better than Domino's. Domino's give you like the smallest size ever and it's a bit shit, so don't do that. But I get more excited about the sauces. I quite like a bit of garlic mayo on it. And I know this is going to sound weird, but like aubergine's quite nice on pizza. I didn't think I'd be down with it, but I am. An aubergine, to anyone in America listening, is an eggplant. There you go. Being international. But yeah, gluten-free tips. If you're gluten-free, best pizzas are Pizza Express and Pizza Hut, and garlic mayo and aubergine on top of my pizza. Okay, here's one that I knew was going to come. Best championship manager, football manager, team, and why? And then there's a sub-question as well of, is there an announcer that has influenced you and why? Also, someone replied to this tweet with, your pro evolution start in 11 from the original players in the Master League. It's literally just the team that you get given, because it's amazing. What's it called? Castello up front, that was basically like a budget Fat Ronaldo. Amazing. Honestly, I know Master League and like Ultimate Team's got a bit like, you know, Luke Crate-y and a bit meh these days, but like original Master League on Pro Evo, around about like Pro Evo 5, woof, untouchable. Pro Evo 4, Pro Evo 5, woof, amazing. Right, best football manager team and why? I've told this story before, but I went standard Liège on Football Manager 2010 and won a Champions League with an all-Belgium side that included Kevin De Bruyne and Eden Hazard, among others. I think I definitely had like Stephen Defoe and Axel Witsel in that team, but I feel like I had Vincent Kompany, which if you know, is a bit weird because he's an Anderlecht legend, he's playing there now. That is my favourite team I've ever had. On the newest incarnations, I've started with Brentford, which has been really fun, because they're a super interesting club. If you're not sure about Brentford, in terms of why they're interesting, Google Brentford B team, The Athletic, which is a football writing app/website, did a really good article on their B team structure recently, and just look into the club as well, because they're owned by someone that owns a Danish club as well, and they both run on like analytics and stats. So basically, if you're a Football Manager fan, just you will love them. So yeah, I've been Brentford on the new one, and I've enjoyed that. I kind of accidentally got them promoted automatically in the first season to the Premier League, and we were massively underprepared. So I've bought my players and I've set my team up to play in the Premier League for the following season. And I'm really worried because we're going to get relegated like quite quickly. To put it into context, I got Nathan Clyne on a free transfer and had to sign him as a star player. So that's how good that team is. But yeah, Brentford have been really fun. I've also, I'm trying out some tactics and stuff. So I've been LAFC at the minute, which has been really, really good fun in MLS. LAFC are like one of the newer franchises. I think they've been around like 2 or 3 years now. They won the Supporters Shield last year. Oh God, there's someone in America just telling me off. But they didn't win the MLS. But they've got like Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, Diamande, if you're a Hull fan and remember him. They've got like a really cool team that's like quite... they've got like quite a lot of Mexican players and Uruguayan players, as well as American players with South American or Latino heritage. And they're a really interesting club in terms of being a modern club that's very much in touch with the LA community and understanding what their fans want and stuff. So they're sponsored by YouTube as well, and they do loads of YouTube content. So go check them out. If you've never really watched the MLS, it's pretty wild, but they're super interesting. So yeah, at the minute it's Brentford and it's LAFC. That is the longest answer to a question that should have just been 2 seconds, but hey ho, there's your Football Manager / football content. Okay, so the second part of that question, my God, I'm rambling. Is there an announcer that has influenced you and why? I think it's weird because there isn't not a ring announcer. There's ring announcers that I really like. I really like Greg Hamilton. I like Mike Rome, and I really like Andy Shepherd at NXT UK. I've met Andy a few times, and he's also a really, really nice guy. But I really like Andy because he had never ring announced before. He's actually a presenter and does a lot more of that. So his improvement from his first out on the job to now, and then to see him at Worlds Collide, being on the panels, leading the panels for the TakeOver UK stuff, was super cool to see because he's working really hard at it and he's actually really good at it. There's a few other people as well. NXT always produce some good talent. There's commentators I like. So current commentators I really like. I think Beth Phoenix is awesome, and I think it's not going to be long until she gets put on the main roster, because again, her improvement, she's starting to find her confidence now, and it's a difficult job for her to get, you know, her place in a commentary team with Nigel McGuinness and Ranello, because they're both really well established and both very good at what they do. But she's doing an awesome job, and I really rate Beth Phoenix at the minute. The New Japan commentary is always really good. The English commentary, Kevin Kelly is. You know, a legend at what he does. That's really good. In terms of historical people, I love Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon for obvious reasons. Ken Walton, I absolutely adore Ken Walton. So Ken Walton, if you don't know, is the guy that did all of the World of Sport commentary. And was actually Canadian, but had that beautiful sort of transatlantic elocution lessons of, oh, hello, good afternoon, grapple friends. And he had this really like calming way, and he was ace. So anytime, if you watch any World Sport on YouTube and you hear this voice, that is Kent Walton. I remember there's a Mark Rocco match, and in between the rounds, he's like, oh, there's Mark Rocco there. Of course, Mark's dad, whatever Mark's dad's name is, it's something like QC. He's like, of course, he's a horseman, rides horses, trains horses, and just starts going on about how, like, Mark Rocco's family's like really famous for like riding horses, despite Rocco being like one of the biggest villains in the World of Sport era. And it always makes me chuckle. But yeah, Kent Walton's great. Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon are great. And like I said, there's loads of people doing really good stuff for the minute. But in terms of influences, I wouldn't say that I'm actually influenced by an announcer. I'm influenced by a lot of people. When we did the original Tetsujin, my brief from Craig and Gaz was go full Bruce Buffer, which still pops us to this day and like makes us laugh, because there is times where I go full Bruce Buffer these days. How much did you enjoy the Schadenfreude Schadengrap show last week? It was nice to chat to you at the interval on Wednesday. Hope your throat gets better. Yeah, Matt came and had a word with me during the interval, and I nearly died because my throat was really, really bad. As you can probably tell, I'm still a bit stuffy and whatever. I've just been ill consistently since like January 1st to this date, and I can't seem to not be a fully 100%, so that's a little bit frustrating. But yeah, it was super nice to chat to you, Matt. Always a pleasure. The Shard and Grap show was awesome. So I went on the second night. I wasn't there on the first night. But yeah, it's super special. Like, they are so clever in what they've created there. They know their brand, they know their fans, they know their size in terms of venues and intimacies, and they really are creating something super, super special. They're really, really, really smart people that are behind running that company, and it will become a juggernaut in terms of keeping it on the ground slash sort of a smaller size. Because it's PWG, right? It's PWG. It's that. PWG never, even though they outgrew that one venue in Rashida, it took them years to leave that one venue in, you know, Rashida, their refusal to do an on-demand service and just do DVDs. Like, it's got that PWG vibe about it, and I mean that in the most positive way. On that actual show, Kid Like Us 2 versus Dean Allmark was absolutely awesome. Like, really good. Like, as good a match as you'll see anywhere in the country. Obviously, all the comedy stuff is absolutely hilarious. And the opening four-way of Callum Newman, Big Guns Joe, Luke Jacobs, and Ethan Allen was awesome to see, because obviously I know three of the people in that very well. And then Callum Newman is really talented and probably about 12 years old as well. So I'm sure all four of them are going to go on and do amazing stuff. But yeah, absolutely love the show. Hopefully I can get down again in future. But yeah, go and check it out. I know me saying go and check it out means absolutely nothing, and you probably won't be able to get tickets, but do it, fight for it. It is worth it. Okay, so fighting game characters, or just video game characters in general, that you feel would be great wrestlers. I mean, the obvious one is King from Tekken, and was it Craig Murdoch, his nemesis that turns into his tag team partner in Tekken? Yeah, King's an obvious one. I can't remember if it was Tekken 6 or Tekken 7, but one you could make your fighters customable. Wow, I don't think that's a word. You could customize your characters. You could get an actual like tiger mask, like luchador mask for King. But it took ages to unlock, and you had to like do it. I was obsessed with unlocking it just because I wanted to have, and he has like Tiger Mask gear, so I just wanted to make him Tiger Mask, because obviously that's the inspiration behind the character. Video game characters, Cloud from Final Fantasy VII would be really cool. I know Kenny Omega's sort of touched on the JRPG stuff and the sort of anime stuff before, but in my head, for some reason, I just feel like Cloud as a Joshi wrestler would just be the coolest fucking thing in the world ever. Yeah, I like the idea of Cloud from Final Fantasy VII coming out with like a big sword. Okay, if there's any weird edits in this podcast, it's because I'm having to go and blow my nose every 2 seconds because I'm still bunged up and stuff. So I do apologize if something just sounds really weird. I mean, in terms of an edit, not just what's coming out of my mouth. Right, next question. I'm going to go with these two because they kind of work together. What three tag teams who've never been in progress, who would you love to bring in? Realistic answers, obviously. Right. UK guys, the 0121. I know we've used Maloney before, but I love him and Darius as a team. It's so good. Darius is like, again, it's always difficult to be like, oh, he's going to have a breakout year and put too much pressure on him. But like, everyone that's been sleeping on Darius, I think, is going to change their opinion this year, because that dude has got it. Whatever the it is, he's got the it factor. So I really like them as a team. Keeping in attack, I really like Experiment in Terror. Oh, for God's sake, and one job. Experiment in Terror with LK and Elijah. I like them both personally as well. Obviously, Elijah's going to be making his progress debut in Cardiff, but I like them as a team when they're not fighting each other. Bloody Lloyd Carter, hey. Then outside of that, I mean, they're kind of realistic, but probably won't ever happen, so I can say them. The first one will be Speed Muscle, which is Naruki Doi and Masato Yoshino. That is like my absolute dream of all dreams. They are my favourite team ever because of my love of Toramon and Dragon Gate. But it will not happen because Yoshino is retiring due to injuries at some point, probably this year. He's just been working an incredibly hard, fast-paced style for the whole of his career, and he doesn't feel like he can continue to do that, and he's going to walk away while he still can. So that's super, super sad, but he did come back from a really serious injury when no one thought he was going to come back, so everyone's kind of been a bit anxious about that. So that's probably never going to happen. Naruki Doi will obviously, to my knowledge, he's still the Open the Dream Gate champion at the minute. I'd love to bring Doi in at some point, but we'd have to make it work, obviously. So yeah, Speed Muscle would be another one. And then I feel like this one is slightly more realistic now, is Motor City Machine Guns. Obviously, we've seen Shelly come back with Kushida in NXT to reunite the Time Splitters. I know Saban's still kind of around online, so I don't really know... if he's wrestling much at the minute, but again, much like Speed Muscle, who, you know, they've had their incredible matches with in TNA, it's probably never going to happen, but Motor City Machine Guns are like the team, you know. Again, I know this is, GYV have always wanted that match, but Grizzled Young Veterans versus Motor City Machine Guns is just, to me, that's just money. That's just absolute money. So yeah, there's some teams for you that I wouldn't mind bringing in. All right, so keeping in with the top three vibes, top three workhorse players in the history of the Premier League, these guys that don't get the plaudits they deserve. I actually spent time thinking about this. So N'Golo Kante has to be in it. Yeah, I mean, he does get the plaudits, so that's, I understand that, but like, there is no player like him. He's just a Swiss army knife of a midfielder, and it pains me to say it because he's a Chelsea player, but he came from Ligue 1 and Ligue 2, so you know, that's cool. Someone who also came from that same system and also played for Chelsea, Michael Essien, was awesome, and again, it pains me to say because he was a Chelsea player, but he did loads of grafting in that team as well, that Mourinho team that was like super functional and slightly destructive, if we're being honest. And he did a load of good work in that. So yeah, Kante, Essien. And then my third one's going to be weird because he isn't what's considered as like a proper workhorse, like type of midfielder, as in he'll get stuck in and then lay off a simple ball. But Xabi Alonso for Liverpool, because he did the outrageous, like the half line, you know, halfway line chip and just be pass beautifully and conduct play beautifully, but he also did a lot of grafting work that you didn't necessarily notice until he left Liverpool, and they got significantly worse because he left. So Xavi Alonso is my left of field third choice in that. Also, I really think he's going to be Spain manager someday. He's already on that journey and on that path. So yeah, you can come back and quote me on that in a few years' time. So yeah, they're my top three. Okay, alright, yeah. Neil asks, did you watch World of Sport? If so, any thoughts? And he says, I'm not asking to be childish, and I'm hoping you'll slate it. Just curious to see how other fans saw it. Didn't take it that way at all, Neil. Don't worry about it. So I was actually at the first tapings live of World of Sport. I went along with Brooker and Sam Bailey's family members, because Sam Bailey was on the pilot. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it to an extent, because they had so much talent in there. A lot of talent that now is funnily enough, in NXT UK, which is Dave Mastiff, Zach Gibson, Legero, the Coffees. I'm probably missing someone else. Kenny Williams, there it is, and others. So they had on the original pilot and the initial setup, they had so much talent, and they seem to be going down the right path of paying tribute to that came before, because Mark Rocco was in the building. They had things with Brian Dixon, Klondike Kate was talking as well, and it felt like it was a nice nod to the past while trying to be like more modern. My problem is that they lost that. They lost that the minute that they did the pilot and then tried to do what they did next. And if you're going to do a wrestling promotion in Britain on that scale, for instance, via ITV, and you want to do your own thing, no problem. But I think the problem that people had, and it's the problem that I had with it, was they used the World of Sport name and then started to steer away from it and calling it WOS. But the problem is there's so much heritage attached to the World of Sport name that if you don't give at least some nod slash authenticity to what had come before, then people are going to get annoyed. And I think that's the issue they had, was they said they were World of Sport and then they weren't the quote-unquote World of Sport slash Lord Mount Evan rules stuff. So you had a generation of people maybe getting more interested in wrestling again and coming back to it and then going, well, what's this? This is really Americanized. You know, an example of that, and again, this is not a knock on the talent of the person, but they brought in Davey Boy Smith Jr., who's a phenomenal pro wrestler, like unbelievable, and obviously has lineage, but he's not a British wrestler in the pure classical way. So I just feel like they did a good job, but it was a missed opportunity to really recapture the spirit of what British wrestling was by using exclusively British talent. And I mean exclusively British talent, not in a, oh, well, we can't use anyone from outside of Britain, but in a, they've learned to wrestle here or have built their name within the British scene. So I enjoyed that pilot. The pilot was great, but I think everything that came after just felt so muddied and confusing and non-authentic that it feels now that it was a missed opportunity. And I hope that's not disrespectful to anyone involved in it. I don't mean it in that way, but there's so much importance in, if you were going to pay homage to something, you really need to get the essence of what made it special in the first place down. And if you're not going to do that, then just do something new, just do something different. So I say all this, but I'd love it if World of Sport came back. I'd love it if World of Sport came back and gave loads of underappreciated people in this country, like wrestlers in this country, a massive platform like ITV, and really like kicked on with it. There's still hope there. There's still hope in terms of it being a concept, but I think that the main focus really needs to be British talent, like young, underappreciated British talent getting an opportunity. Okay, next question. Hello, Matt. Which international talent that we haven't seen in progress before do you want to book for the Super Strong Style 16 Weekender? Really simple answer to this. I've said it a million times. I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. But Kento Miyahara from All Japan, it's probably like 99.9999% sure it won't happen and might never happen, which is a shame because of logistics. But he is awesome. And if you've never seen a Miyahara match, get onto All Japan TV or get onto YouTube, because there is some matches out there and stuff, and watch his run as the Triple Crown champion from 2019 and all his work from before that as well. The dude is just one of the best in the world, and we'd absolutely love, like all three of us would absolutely love to have him in progress, but we just don't think it's going to happen. So yeah. All right, who was the most underrated WCW 2000 act? For me, Freak Out were really clever and one of the most current acts at the time. Yeah, it's Freak Out. It was such a clever little way of of presenting three guys that were like, they kind of got, clearly just went, oh, look, here's some three good-looking dudes that can do really athletic stuff. Oh, they look like a boy band. It sounds like something that someone in creative would have said, but I think all three of them saw it as an opportunity to get themselves out there, and it works really well. So I think Three Count's definitely my choice. I don't know, man. Like, I loved Norman Smiley in that hardcore run, like when he was hardcore champion. I know that's kind of like a bit of a guilty pleasure. I also really enjoyed Ernest the Cat Miller, which again is just, oh, my credibility is just slipping away. Also, Dean replied to this tweet with Lash LaRue. Excellent shout. The Raging Cajun Lash LaRue. Okay. Next question. Which football ground have you not had the chance to go to but would like to, and which mid-2000s hardcore / emo / screamo band would you like to see live again? And if you wanted them to play a specific album from start to finish, what would it be? Football ground, dead easy. San Siro, because it's getting, I don't know if it's getting knocked down, re-renovated. Wow. My English is good today. San Siro, because it's not going to be around much longer, and he's iconic. And yeah, I probably need to sort that out and go and see it. I've been to the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam, but I've not been in it. So that's also on the list. I need to change that because, you know, Ajax aren't a bad football team. And I like Amsterdam as well, so I need to get on that. So yeah, they're probably the football grounds. Which noughties? All right, so I can't think of a band that I've seen because every band I've seen, because again, you say if you see live again, there's not really a band that I've seen that I would like, that I felt unfulfilled by in terms of at that time. So I'm going to go with someone that I haven't seen, like one of the very few bands that I haven't seen, and I know what album. So it would be Saves the Day, and it's Stay What You Are, the whole album in full, please. And I can't remember why I've never seen Saves the Day. For a long time, I used to have like a list of bands that I wanted to see, and they were on it, as well as a band called Emery, that are probably really obscure now, and I've not listened to for about 10 years, but I ended up seeing Emery, and then I just never got around to Saves the Day. I can't remember. There's probably a reason why. They probably weren't touring. There was a band that I never thought, or like a group that I never thought I was going to get to see in my lifetime, but they're a hip-hop group called Jurassic 5, and when I got into them, they'd already split up, and then they got back together, and we went to Parklife one year in Manchester, which was an absolute nightmare, just to watch Jurassic 5, because we never thought we'd see them again. And then I ended up, my friend Stevie won tickets on a radio show to go and watch them in Academy or in a venue in Manchester, so we got to see them twice, so that was quite good. There you go. Okay, why was This Is Football a banger of a game series? Was it Jumpers for Goalpost Mode? I can't remember playing anything other than the first This Is Football game. And the only thing I can remember about that game, if it's the game I'm thinking of, is that essentially you'd get around about the halfway line and just play a through pass, which was just a button. Just pressed triangle. And you'd always be through on goal. That's the only thing I remember about that game. I'm assuming Jumpers for Goalposts was essentially FIFA Street, but way cooler. Am I now going to have to go and play This Is Football? Maybe. We will see. I'll play it along with, was it Michael Owen's World Cup Football on N64? Michael Owen had a game, and on the front of it, yeah, like a knockoff England shirt on it. Well, funny. All right, question. Who let the dogs out? Who? I believe their owners let the dogs out so that they got some healthy exercise, as dogs, especially certain breeds of dogs, need constant stimulation and exercise. This applies if you've got a collie or a greyhound, for instance, despite the greyhounds being little couch potatoes. So there you go. I've solved the mystery. All right, there have been a few UK wrestlers basing themselves in Japan over the past few months. Aside from Will Ospreay, who do you think is the biggest loss to Britress and why? So, obviously, we've got Ridgeway spent extended time out there. Obviously, Drew Parker, Chris Brooks. Then, obviously, the girls in Stardom. So, the likes of Bea Priestley, Sasha Moff, Millie Chevins in Sendai. Zack Sabre Jr. obviously in New Japan as well. It's difficult to say because I feel like they have done pretty much everything they can do in and for this scene at the minute. Drew's an interesting one because Drew's obviously so young, but Drew has an idea about who he wants to be as a wrestler, and Big Japan is the perfect fit for him. Brooks is exactly the same for DDT, but also Brooks has contributed so much to British wrestling already that he now deserves an opportunity to go and contribute to another scene. Ridgeway is exactly the same. Ridgeway's got to a point where he has done pretty much everything he can do over here, so why not go and do new stuff? So I don't really view it as it being a loss rather than a natural progression. In fact, I hope there is more British people and British talent that go out there for extended excursions. You know, you've got Martin Kirby in Dragon Gate visiting. You've got Danny Jones in All Japan visiting, as well as Lucas Steele in All Japan. So I feel like people having, you know, the old classic 6 to 8 months excursions in Japan makes them better. And if and when they return to the British wrestling scene, it makes us better because they've learned stuff and they bring something new. So I don't necessarily see it as a loss, but as a positive. And also as well, there's that thing of it opens up opportunities for other people to take a step up and do you know, have more prominent positions on shows. So I think overall, and it's just my opinion, I just think overall it is a positive thing to happen.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right. Okay, Egan has said, please spend a minute talking about this. Mike Baldwin, 1942 to 2006. Right. So here's, because I was like, I can't talk about Mike Baldwin. He's got nothing to do with wrestling. And then my brain went, he has. So here's a really random thing. The actor that played Mike Baldwin was really good mates with a wrestler called Judo Al Marquette. And Judo Al was an actual judoka. I think he's from like the Midlands, that ended up coming to Manchester and watching wrestling in Manchester and then becoming a British professional wrestler. He had like a really impressive career, as well as being, again, a legitimate judoka. And his gimmick was obviously he'd come out in a gi and do judo throws And he's a really, he was a really, really interesting guy. The reason I know who he is because someone gave me his book. And it's a really fascinating read because I didn't really expect it. And then it kind of just came out of nowhere. So yeah, it's Judo Al Marquette. But yeah, he used to play golf with the actor that plays Mike Baldwin. And they were quite good mates. So there you go. There's a minute and an interesting fact for you as well, I guess. All right. With Joe Nelson taking over the Kid Lykos mask, which young British wrestlers do you think would be candidates to do the same with other retired masked wrestlers? Gene Money as Corey Mantu would bang. Just saying. Completely agree about Gene Money being Corey Mantu. That would be amazing. Maybe we can have a word with Christopher Daniels. Actually, why would we have a word with Christopher Daniels? He was never Corey Man. Ha ha ha. We'll have a word with New Japan, who owned that gimmick. Ha ha ha. Number one, I think, let's just get this out of the way. I think Joe becoming Kid Lykos 2 is the coolest thing in the world. Of knowing Joe for, more accurately, of knowing of Joe for a while, and the dude is super talented. There is no doubt about that. And he's really young in terms of his age, and I feel like this might be the thing that helps him get his name out there a little bit more and get starting breaking out a little bit more. Because my goodness, does he deserve it. Obviously, he started doing Attack. He started doing Fight Club. He's on the Shard and Grapp shows. You know, he is doing incredibly well right now. But I think it's a clever little idea that, to my knowledge, has never been done in modern British wrestling, where someone has taken on someone else's gimmick slash, you know, gimmick slash mask and paid homage to it. I just think it's cool, it's different, it's interesting, and if there's anyone that could, you know, continue that legacy of Lykos, it is Joe Nelson, and I think he's absolutely going to kill it, and I'm really excited for Lykos too, like really excited. So again, he had that incredible match with Dean Allmark, and yeah, from what I've seen and what I've heard, he had a banger with Brooks as well the night before. So yeah, I'm excited to see where that goes. Right, so retired mask wrestlers, I don't think anyone. There is literally no one that I would. We've been speaking about Liger the last two shows and about how there probably should never be a Jushin Liger too. So I guess it's, I mean, maybe when Ligero retires slash, like, you know, takes the mask off slash whatever, I guess the Ligero too would be sensible. Though everyone suspects there's multiple Ligeros anyway. Yeah, a Ligero 2. Let's do it. You know, when there was like always a crossover with Tiger Masks and stuff, like there was a couple that were in existence at the same time. We should do a Ligero 2 that only exclusively does independent bookings. While Ligero does his WWE NXT commitments. So yeah, there you go, Ligero 2. Let me know your suggestions. Who should be Ligero to? I'm assuming they should be from Los Angeles, Mexico, of course, not from Yorkshire. Right, what have we got? What's your favourite Slipknot song, and which member of Slipknot would make the best wrestler? So my favourite Slipknot song is like, it's kind of thing that your dad would say, I feel kind of ashamed because it's quite a, it's a later song in the catalogue, and it's quite a mainstream song, but it's Duality. I love that song. It's proper boss. It's really good. Best member, it's got to be Corey Taylor because he loves wrestling anyway. Like proper loves wrestling, and yeah, he's got the charisma. Yeah, Corey Taylor, definitely Corey Taylor. Good question. Right. Right. Yes, we're getting in to the nitty-gritty of the questions. Okay, I'm just double-checking that I've got everything lined up. Which ones do I want to answer first? All right, cool. So how would you have done the invasion angle, and which WCW wrestlers would you have pushed harder? Oh, this is a question. So I wouldn't have done the invasion angle. if I was being brutally honest, like, It just... So let's put it into context. Right? So when the invasion angle started, it was... For again, as someone that had been pretty new to watching wrestling and also loved WCW and was always curious about ECW, when the invasion angle started, it was the most exciting thing in wrestling. I was like super excited leading into the invasion pay-per-view with that Jeff Hardy RVD match. Like, right at the beginning of it was super, super exciting and super cool. And pretty much everything after the invasion, the pay-per-view, kind of ended weirdly, and then people started jumping over and changing, like, alliances and being a villain and being a good guy, and it just got really messy and weird and, like, diluted. So, if I had to do the invasion angle, I probably would have done what they did at the beginning, which was kind of like the anti-WWE thing. But then I would have had the Survivor Series thing, you know, the whoever which team wins, you know, wins, gains control, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I would have had the Survivor Series either as three teams, which I know everyone's going to be like, what? I watched Toramon and Dragon Gate. They do three teams. Three teams of six all the time. It's fine. I would have had three teams, and then the winning team gets to basically decide what happens. Essentially, I would have got to the point where I would have had ECW, WCW, and WWE as a brand each. So what we have now with like NXT, Raw, and SmackDown, I would have just established that. You could have had ECW as like the NXT of its time. You could have had WWE as, you know, Raw. So the established stars, and then WCW could have been SmackDown. It could have been, you know, the Guerreros, the Edges, the Mysterios, the Workhorses. And then the general managers of each show should be a representative of each company. So Heyman for ECW, whoever you want for WCW. I understand Bischoff came in later, but Flair probably would have been a better one. And then obviously WWE would have been a McMahon or whatever. But yeah, I would have basically done the brand split earlier. Like, and I also would have had WWE lose. And then every year at Survivor Series, we'd have a proper Survivor Series where every Survivor Series match was basically... They did a thing called bragging rights, right? Like that. Basically, you just have the three brands competing with each other. So it's hindsight's 2020 because now you can see where they wanted to go with it. Eventually, I just would have accelerated that or just not done it. I would have had individual programming because I just think that would have been, I don't know, like I think the excitement always was, for me, was always, say for instance you did a WCW TV show, you know, whether it's Nitro or Thunder, whatever you want to call it, and then had a WWE guy turn up, you know, in, say, you know, in the build up to a WrestleMania, that would have felt really exciting and like really different, you know. Say for instance you got Booker T as the WCW champion and then Triple H turns up on a WCW show, like, it goes back to that Monday Night Wars thing of, oh, that's really exciting and different. So, yeah, I guess that's what I would have done. I would have got to the brand split a lot quicker. Whether that's by the Alliance winning or just not doing the invasion angle, though I said that I did quite like it. I probably would have just done the brand split. It's really difficult because we all had high hopes for it, but then obviously things like contractual things and, you know, other forms of politics prevented getting a lot of stuff that we would have wanted. In terms of people that weren't pushed, obviously everyone was just Chris Kanyon, which I agree with because Kanyon was super cool. I just feel like we never got a really authentic slash good presentation of the cruiserweights. Like, obviously, Helms was Helms for a bit, and then we had, like, Kidman, and we had X-Pac, and then Helms did Hurricane. But, like, I just never felt we had... Even when WCW was bad, and it was bad, the cruiserweights were always a highlight, and we never got to see that. It's the same with ECW. Even when ECW was, you know... a bit rocky, we always got like a Van Damme or a Lynn or a Rhino or a Carino that, you know, kind of saved it from from the other questionable things that they did. So, yeah, I think for WCW, it isn't so much one person, but they should have pushed the cruiserweight division harder, in my opinion. So there you go. I just played EWR on the podcast. Lol. Okay, so we've got two questions left, I think. Yes, we do. We have two questions left. All right. How do you go about setting and achieving your goals? Do you find it better to break up goals into smaller chunks to make it easier to get past check marks, or set things more difficult to push yourself? Right. So, a couple of things. So, first of all, I am super struggling this year so far, because January has been a write-off. Like, any momentum I've been picking up, I've just been ill or just been run down because I'm tired or whatever. So I'll level with you. I've been really honest. I've really struggled so far to get in motion with a lot of things. So It's not that I'm in a rut at the minute. It's just that I'm in a place where I'm like constantly trying to pull myself up so I can then start focusing on the little things that I want to achieve. I used to write a list of things that I wanted to achieve on January 1st in my phone, in my notes, and then hide it down the bottom of my notes, forget about it, and then come back to it in December or at certain points to see how far I progressed. And they were like a really like wide variety of things, you know, from professional to personal. I've not done it for this year yet, again, because I'm kind of just in a space at the minute where I'm a bit like, ugh, I just need to get back onto level playing field and a level ground before I start thinking. But I think overall, in general terms, I know it sounds weird, but I don't really have goals. And in terms of, I'm not a person like, you know, like you get it a lot in wrestling. Like, oh, I want to work for this company. I want to work in this building. I want to do this. I want to achieve that. I want to do that. I don't really have that. I'm not that way. I'm not programmed that way. I'm kind of whatever happens, happens. And like, as long as I'm happy and enjoying it, then that's enough for me. And again, whatever you want to call it, luck, fortune, you know, whatever. I have been really fortunate in all the cool shit that I've done. You know, I said it, and I know this sounds really weird, and everyone will be like, okay. But like, after I introduced Shima in Fight Club, I was just like, nah, I can retire. Like, I was just happy. Like, everything I've done professionally, I never in a million years would have thought I'd ever done it. So I would have ever, you know, achieved that or ever done that. So for me now, I'm just in a point where I'm just like, look, whatever happens is just cool. And I'm just going to enjoy it. Like, you know, Tampa's a really good example. Like, I get to go and ring announce a progress show on WrestleMania weekend, which is something that I just, you know, the progress thing, first of all, I never thought was going to happen. And second of all, I get to be in the States to do Mania weekend. So, like, that's really cool. I never thought in a million years I'd ever be in Wembley Arena involved in a wrestling show. But there we go. I did commentary and there we have it. Like, so, again, I never really set big goals. But I do set little goals. So, like, I have a checklist for the week, and then the stuff, it's a really mixture of things. Like, the podcasts have been a little bit all over the place at the minute. I'll be the first to admit that, and I apologize for that. Usually I have concepts and ideas that are like for about a month or two, and then if I have to do an episode outside of that, for, you know, if an opportunity presents itself, then I will always do it. So I set the kind of like my list for the week of little things, and it can be just like, this sounds really stupid, but like, you know, do the dishes or Hoover or get a haircut and stuff like that, as well as like, okay, I need to Obviously, with a new job now with Progress, I need to do this for Progress. I need to do this with the podcast. I need to do this with something else. So I set smaller goals on a weekly basis rather than, oh, here's a really like mental thing that I really want to do. So that's kind of how I work. I just do the little things, and then the big things, when the big things come up, I'm like way more prepared for it. I think that's there you go. There's my advice, is do all the little things so that when a big thing comes, or you have a big thing in your sight, you are the best prepared person to do it. You know, Progress for me is an example for that. I never thought I would work for Progress in either capacity, you know, whether it be creative or as a ring announcer, but I made sure I prepared myself by doing little things in both jobs that if an opportunity ever came, that I'd be prepared to do it. And then when they asked me, I was like, kind of, I freaked out a little bit, I'm not gonna lie, but I was kind of like, all right, cool, I can do this because I've been doing XYZ for the week/month/year. There you go. There's a little bit of an insight into how I do things and how I think. So yeah, I don't have massive aspirations. I'm not like, oh, I want to work here or I want to do this. Like, as long as I'm happy and I'm healthy and I'm financially stable, I just want to do cool shit. Like, as long as I'm happy and I really enjoy it. Like, that's the thing that I'm massively driven by, is like my enjoyment of what I'm doing and if it makes me feel happy, not ticking a box or being able to kind of be showy or braggy about the things that I'm doing. As long as I'm just like, oh shit, this is cool as fuck, then I'm more than happy, more than grateful. Okay. One final question. And it's a big one, for me anyway. So there is a thing about the beginning of the question is asking me about Joe Nelson as Kid Like Us 2, which I've already spoken about because it's flipping awesome. But this is the last question. What should the Northwest mainstays or any local subculture of wrestlers, for example, the Northeast, be doing to increase their presence on a national stage and broaden their appeal further south? Right, the reason I left this to last is because this is the thing that I get asked about a lot privately, and I feel like there's a level of expectation from some people in terms of my use / representation of Northern wrestlers, because it is, you know, it's the scene that I came through with, and it's the scene that I love, and it's the scene that I'm super proud of, because everyone in it, you know, for the most part is phenomenally talented. So wrestling has always been segregated in terms of Britain of North Midlands, South, and then you've got Wales, you've got Scotland, and then obviously across the pond you've got Ireland. It's always been that way. It is now less so that way because of a plethora of things. Just more exposure, more opportunities, and people making a conscious decision to change this. This is our pocket of the world. We're going to stay here and that's it. Like, people's ideas of that have changed. You know, you look, for instance, look at the Shard and Grap show. You know, you had Callum Newman on the show, who is not a Northern wrestler, but, you know, Callum Newman is someone who's wrestled in NGW recently as well as down south. And then you've got, you know, Big Joe, you've got Luke, you've got Ethan. You know, Luke and Ethan have got Fight Club Pro coming up, they've got OTT coming up, they've worked for Progress. You know, they are, now there is talent that is working everywhere in the country as well as everywhere in the world. I think with the Northwest, there's a few things to take into consideration. Number one, you have to accept what the perception and stereotype of the scene is. The perception of our scene is that we're all good grafters, all good mechanics, but we're not very interesting and we always make sure we cover someone facing hard cam. That is the perception of it. It always has been and always will be. And I don't necessarily think that that is a negative thing, because I do think that the Northwest, for whatever reason, whether it be the training schools or the audiences or the promotions that people work for, do produce very, very solid, fundamentally solid wrestlers that the negative that's put on top of them isn't very interesting. Now, I disagree with the lack of interest type thing. The thing that the Northwest is doing currently, and the North in general, because I'm going to class the Northeast in that as well, because they're killing it as well. They are making their regional promotions, or their promotions in their areas, they are building their own identity there, whether it be in Northeast, you've got Rise, you've got North, you know, whether it's NGW, whether it's Future Shock, whether it's Fighting Spirit, whether it's TNT, you know, whether it's GPW, there is so many different promotions that are doing so many different things. Tidal as well in Yorkshire, as well as places like Grapple, True Grit, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on of these promotions in the North slash Northwest slash Northeast. But the people now are cottoning on to, we have got local talent here that we should be giving opportunities to. So I think the first thing that needs to happen is that the companies in that area need to present this talent as a big deal to their local audiences, because it's about buzz. You're creating buzz, you're creating interest. You know, if you present someone as a main eventer or as a champion, people start to believe that, because that is wrestling. If you're like, this person is a believable champion and a believable person for you to get behind, and then have the talent to do that, then they're gonna flourish. So I think that's the main thing, is we have to make sure, especially, you know, I'm talking specifically about the Northwest, because I know it better than other scenes. Specifically in the Northwest, we have to make sure that we protect and build our scene by presenting our talent in the best possible light before thinking about outside exposure. Then onto outside exposure. Using people from outside of the scene, or with more pulling power to elevate the people within our scene, is imperative. It's the difference between someone being the guy that everyone's like, oh, he's really good, or the girl, you know, that everyone's like, oh, she's really good, to having the quote-unquote, and I don't like the term because I feel like it's a little bit disrespectful, but the breakout match. The example I'll use in this is Cara Noir versus Pac at Riptide. There is not a doubt in my mind that several thousand people knew how good Cara Noir was before that match. There's people that knew how good Tom Dawkins was before that match. Everyone knew within the bubble how good Cara was, but it was the Pac match that helped everyone outside of the bubble see how good Cara was. And I will forever compliment and applaud Riptide's ability and their decision to make Pac elevate their wrestler. That, to me, is a really intelligent way of helping people get exposure and helping people go, oh, actually, that guy, you know, that's pretty good, because they can be tearing it down with people that they work with constantly, week in, week out. But when they have a high profile match, people maybe go, oh, actually, that guy's, you know, on a different level to than I expected. Also, as well, you only get better by working better people. So if you bring someone in from the outside and they are perceived to be one of the best wrestlers in the world, then that person is going to get better because they are going to learn. It's a learning experience. So again, there is so many facets to it, but I really think the main point is build your scene around your talent and present them in a way that is going to elevate them as quote-unquote stars or champions or believable people to get behind or boo. And then the second part of that is, do not just isolate yourself. Bring other people in, but do it to the furtherment of your promotion and your scene and your talent. And then that way, I think it picks up natural momentum for bigger promotions, either in Europe or in this country, to take notice. And that's pretty much it. And, you know, like, let's not forget as well, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Welsh / Midland scene of the Attack lads and Brooks and Pete and all those guys. There was a point in British wrestling where they were looked down upon and classed as the outcasts, and that they weren't British wrestlers, and they were just taking the piss, and they were just cosplaying as wrestlers. And now those people are the best wrestlers in the world and arguably the most beloved promotions in the world. So this stuff comes and goes through phases, but I really think if you take care, again, you know, going back to the goals thing, if you take care of the small things, the big things come, or you're more prepared when the big things come. So yeah, that's it. That's all my questions. Thank you so much for tweeting me. I really enjoyed it. I'm trying to be more open and honest about stuff, and hopefully, hey, following on, connect with you as an audience. So yeah, hopefully you enjoyed this, and hopefully you enjoy my ranty answers to every question. I apologize that my I'm sniffly and my throat's a little bit, you know, hoarse, but I promise you I will get better when the sun comes back out. I'm just a sickly, pale ginger boy. Right, okay, so we have got more Tuesday Night Draw coming up next week, of course. I think I've got a guest sorted for it. I'm not going to say 100%. When it's confirmed, when it's done, I will announce it, we have a guest. We are, obviously, I've also got some more ideas and concepts coming up in the future, along the lines of the stuff that we did, like Brian versus Goliath and the Curious Case of the Can-Am Express, etc., like that. So those episodes are going to be coming in the future, as well as hopefully getting a few more guests pinned down, as well as maybe I don't know, man, like, let me know. Maybe we do a Q&A episode once a month or once every month and a half. If that's of any interest and you've made it this far into the podcast, then let me know. But in the meantime, appreciate all your support and taking time out of your day to listen to this podcast, and I'll see you next week on Tuesday Night Draw.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.